Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big social issues that affect this republic of inequality. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and currently Shannon's candidate, plug, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and alter ego, Tony Groves. Tony, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Rory. No, listen, folks, this is a difficult time. Obviously, everybody is up to their eyes with the whole situation around COVID-19. But I would ask that if you want us to keep making these podcasts, we do need support. We're going to try and bring you as much content as we can over this difficult period. So while you're trapped at home, we'll be trying to keep you a little bit informed, a little bit entertained. So the price of a cup of coffee, go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. I know it sounds really bad to be asking under circumstances, but we will try to keep the stuff coming out over these things, but we need support to do it.
We will do. And also, if you have that NUI ballot at home, fill it out and post it. Don't leave it sitting there.
Right, enough of that, Rory. We travelled to Maynooth, to the university, because you put on, for the second year in a row, the new public housing conference, and you brought people from across all aspects of whether it was to deal with the actual people in homelessness or experiencing housing difficulty, experts, academics, activists, and all of these people from the travelling community and all the rest of it. And it's a great credit to you and the people in Maynooth that this is the second year that it's gone, and it's such high calibre of people have come. This conversation right now is with Dr. Niall Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman, and it's a powerful conversation. It's a powerful talk.
It is, and it was great, and thank you, Tony, for coming out to the conference, and I was really delighted with the impact and the kind of the discussion that we had at it, and you know, to deal with the whole issue of the housing crisis. I think it's really important that it doesn't fall off the radar in terms of what COVID-19 is going on. Obviously, we have to respond to it, but a next government as well. You know, it's important that the solutions are out there. And we did have some great speakers that we're going to, you know, put out now over the next while. I think that the Niall's talk was really powerful, I think, and I said this to him, for somebody in his position to be quite explicit about the failures around homelessness and particularly the treatment of children, I think is quite important, because for too long, I think many sort of what you might call pillars of society in Ireland were kind of said behind closed doors, critiqued social issues, but they didn't come out publicly. And it's great to see Niall really focus on engaging people and involving the children themselves and going out and talking to the children in family hubs. We have 3,570 children who are homeless in this country with their families. And it is wrong, and we need to understand the impact that it's happening. It is traumatizing a generation, and I think Niall does a really good job in outlining the impact and what we need to do. And in particular, just last point, the right to housing in the Constitution. He laid out his support for that again, and that was one of the things that came out of the conference for me, was a very clear sense that we need to have a campaign for the right to housing, to put it in the Constitution, and there's strong momentum behind that.
Just to explain to listeners, Niall gave this talk. He will talk through the results of their survey when they went in to visit people who lived in emergency accommodation, children who were directly impacted. So some of the words he's reading are the words of those children, and it had a profound impact in the room, and I hope it has a profound impact when you hear them, because as he says himself, out of the mouths of babes.
Okay, thank you very much, Rory. And thanks a million for the invitation, I suppose, to this event. Rory was one of the few people that helped. My children couldn't care less what job I do, but I've made them feel good twice, which was when they got to meet the president, my first day in the office, and then I got to be on a podcast with Rory. Who knew? I didn't tell them what it was about. They just said, "Oh, you're on a podcast. That's cool." So I appreciate that, and I'm great to be here. I suppose, yeah. I mean, Rory set it up. The family hubs, really, it's putting a children's perspective on what it's like to be homeless is what we're trying to do here. My office, I've been in office for 5 years, and the first 3 years strategic plan, one of the focuses, there's three children's cohorts: children with disability, children who are homeless, and children with mental health issues that we focused on for that 3 years. When we came back last year, at the end of 2018, to look for our next three-year strategic plan, we realised we couldn't step away from homeless children, and it's still such a big, big issue. It's just, as Rory says, it's a real stain on our character as a society to allow any child to be in this situation, given they were at least in the top five of the most well-to-do countries in Europe. And I think we're the most, the highest GDP in Europe last year, or for 2019. So it's really a stain on their character, as I say. I'll leave that for a second. Just figures-wise, in the first, the end of January, 1,611 families, 3,574 children. So 1,600 families and 3,500 children are in homelessness at this moment in time. 69% of those families are in Dublin and 31% in the region. So again, it's not just a Dublin-centric. That's one of the things I keep emphasising. It's not a Dublin-centric issue alone. Obviously, the majority is always going to be there, but you've got a lot of children and families suffering around the country as well. Lone parents represent over half of the families accessing emergency accommodation in January, 57%, reminding us of the risk that they have in general. Other types of families are at higher risk include young parents between aged between 18 and 24, and those with four or more children, they're at higher risk again of homelessness. These figures in and of themselves then ignore a whole range of other hidden homeless we touched on earlier before, couch surfing, those living with three generations in a small house, those staying with the in-laws, those in emergency accommodation through the direct provision services, which figures showed last week that they spent, there's about 30 to 40 hotels catering for direct provision children at this moment in time, earning 27 million last year for 11 months up to the end of November 2019, just in emergency accommodation for direct provision. So again, same concept, but it's a cohort of children that are rarely talked about in this situation. And even within the direct provision service itself, 5,500 people within direct provision, almost 1,000 of them have permission to stay, but they're staying within direct provision because they have no housing to go out into, no accommodation to go out into. So again, we're keeping our children based on our housing situation, keeping them in situations that are far from conducive to family life. The concept of family hub itself, which is what we're going to talk about from my point of view, in 2016, Rebuilding Ireland never mentioned family hubs. It wasn't part of the solution. But the promise was to get children and families out of emergency accommodation, hotels and B&Bs within a year. Simon Coveley couldn't achieve that, but somebody came up with the concept of a hub, started creating hubs, but they're created without an evidence base, without an initial pilot phase, and with no clear public policy objectives attached to them. So they just developed. They were certainly considered to be better than houses or than hotels and B&Bs. In December 2019, there were 30 family hubs, which are accommodating over 690 families at that stage. And the majority, again, were in the Dublin region, but there's also hubs in Cork, Limerick, Kildare and Louth. And my understanding is that they're hoping to create another 400 hub spaces, so facilities for another 400 families are coming online soon. And I know there's been discussions in Tipperary, Clare and Galway for family hubs. So again, rather than it becoming a solution which would soon go away, it's becoming one that's been entrenched, starting to become entrenched. So between October 2018 and January 2019, myself and the team decided to do a consultation with children and families in those family hubs. We met with 37 children between the ages of 5 and 17, and we spoke to 33 parents who represent 43 children under 5 years of age from across 8 family hubs. And we're trying to get a sense of what it's like to actually live in those hubs for the children. We created this report, No Place Like Home, and talked about three questions we asked the children themselves. What did they like about living in the family hubs? What did they find challenging about it? And what would they change? So three simple questions for all those children. We spent a number of times meeting them, a couple of different consultations, so they got used to us and trusted us. And as regards the positives that came with that, children were very clear, very honest as ever. They liked the stability that came with living in a family hub. So again, they weren't moving around. They weren't on a hub or on a couch. They weren't wondering which uncle or aunt they would have to stay with. They weren't living in day-by-day accommodation, because day-by-day accommodation is still a big problem. They were able to generate some friends, because some of the hubs might have up to 50 families in them, so you could create friendships there. Some of them had play facilities. Some of the facilities they had were much better than they would have been used to. There were activities. If they had a child support worker in the family hub, the activities would be arranged for them. They could have some opportunities that way. The food would be more consistent. Staff were good. Support was good, safety was good, and helpfulness. So again, there was that overall sense that we enjoy parts of what's happening here, and it gives us that stability. And again, that's the whole essence of it's better than a hotel and it's better than a B&B. That's what it's meant to do. So we acknowledge the positives within that. But also we've got to remember that several of the younger people could not identify anything positive about living in a family hub for them. The 13 and 17 year olds were able to identify more because they were able to compare with what life was like beforehand and the difficulties they had in getting by. The parents of the children under five, again, were ones who really could talk about how much better it was than what it was, what it used to be, the security that they got from it. But there was also negatives. You know, the negative impact in living in this type of environment for a whole range of family issues. So issues, things like your parenting skills, the individual and family privacy, children's ability to get adequate rest and sleep, children's health, their well-being and their development, children's ability to learn and study, children's opportunities for play, their exposure to aggression and fighting within family hubs, children's freedom of movement, and their ability to maintain relationships with extended families and friends. So again, if you have a grandmother who wants to come and visit from down the country, you have to meet them at McDonald's or somewhere else. You can't. You might meet them in a family room, but that's full of other people. So the relationship started to get strained in many different ways. And we were met, as you can see from here, let's take a look at Lucy there. I don't like living here because I get bullied. 7 years of age, your own house, your own home where you're supposed to be safe and protected, you get bullied. Some days I didn't even want to wake up because I didn't want to face this day. I'm tired in schools, and some days I would just sit there and not even smile. 10 years of age. School is supposed to be the happier place, but your lifestyle and the way you live doesn't give you that opportunity to take advantage of it. Noah, 10 years of age, I hate everything here. Again, 16-year-old, again, that little bit more self-aware, self-conscious. It's embarrassing, it's horrible, it's not nice. Lena then, age 9 years of age, and again, what have they been listening to? What have they been hearing? What is their life revolving around when they say at 9 years of age, they, the government, in charge, and landlords, they need to tell the landlords to keep the prices down and build more houses. Out of the mouths of babes, lads, out of the mouths of babes, this is what we're saying. The 10-year-old, again, the life that she's living, there should be more public housing around this place. What I want the government to do is that I hate to know is that I hate this place, and I'm not going to lie, I just hate this place. And fine, in here, it's just my sister is the problem. She isn't the problem, but I want better for her. So again, you've got a 10-year-old taking a parenting role, protecting their child. That's what we're forcing our children into doing. We need to get real about this and realize the impact that it's having them on an intimate psychological basis. You know, and there was a consistent reference about feeling ashamed, and the parents consistently spoke about the feeling that they'd failed in their role as parents. So again, we're storing up a huge anger and a huge shame and a huge problem for ourselves and society, because shame and failure underscore the corrosive impact of what's happening with homelessness and for the parents and families involved. And it gives that long-term impact on their sense of dignity and self-esteem. And I think we're going to pay for it in the future as society, because those children, those young people will store that up. And I think it's going to come back in many, many different ways, unfortunately. The UN Special Rapporteur on Adequate Housing talked about how homelessness is a violation of human rights, because the lived experience of homelessness, in her words, were challenges the very core of what it means to be human, and it assaults the dignity and threatens life itself. That's what we've got over 1,600 families in. That's what we've got over 3,500 children living in. Some of the recommendations we made within our report were around provision, policy and provision. We need to make a policy decision that we only have specific timelines. It was originally supposed to be a 6-month timeline, but again, using our lived experience of 20 years of direct provision, it was only supposed to be a 6-month timeline. You're in and out in 6 months. Let's not let hubs and family homelessness become a long-term situation. There needs to be independent formal evaluation of the suitability of family hubs as an overall policy. We need to figure out if it's going to work, and is it working? Is it helping our people getting in and getting out? And we need to also, while they're in there, combat the stigma for families associated with family homelessness and help them promote their self-esteem and their dignity. We need to provide things like child support workers, therapeutic supports, and family support services to help them get out. Standards and inspections need to happen, and we also need to have legislation. So again, legislation-wise, this is the longer-term one. We need to know that existing primary legislation is amended so that children become visible within that legislation. Local authorities are forced to look at children and their needs when they make a decision about accommodation. And also we're pushing the idea that housing needs to be one of the constitutional rights that we put forward as quickly as possible. And again, just looking at the words of the UN committee, the Kofi Annan, there's no duty more important than ensuring that the rights of children are respected, that their welfare is protected, that their lives are free from fear and want, and that they can grow up in peace. And just as I finalize, I'm just going to close off with another set of a quote from one I use often, but it's Brian Friel, the Irish playwright. He talked about words being the weapons of the dispossessed. And from our point of view, that's what our consultation is. We want our children and their words to be the weapons that are fired at our state to make them change the way they deal with children and families in homelessness, and the way they provide accommodation and support our whole society, so that everybody has an equal chance to housing and the right to it. So I'll finish up with that and say thank you very much to Rory for putting this together, and I'm really delighted to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, folks. Listen, again, I hate to keep going on about it, but we need support. Do click on the Patreon button below or on the link below, and it really helps us. Talk to you all soon.